So now, how did you first come to work on Batman Gotham Knight?
I got a call from Susie Savino, who is the vice president of music, one of the vice presidents of music, I think, for animation at Warner Brothers. She had said that Bruce Timm was a fan of my work on the Hellboy animated shows that I did, which was just amazing to me because I'm a huge. It was funny because here I had Susie on the phone explaining to me who Bruce Timm was and why he's important, and I was like, "You have no idea the Batman animated fanboy that you're talking to." So I was trying to be all cool on the phone, like, "Oh, okay, great. Well, yeah, well, give me a call when Bruce is ready to talk. That'd be fantastic." And I hung up, and then and my son Michael, who's 12, he grew up on that. I was like, they want me to do a Batman. So that was really exciting. And again, I was such a fan of that show, and I know all of Bruce's work, not only with his work in animation, but I'm a comic book geek, so I know I love his artwork. I love the art of the genre as well. So yeah, it was a huge honor that Bruce personally was interested in me and getting to work with him. So that was a good phone call.
So now, with all the interpretations of music for the Batman, what did you do to distinguish yourself and yet still keep it in the Batman universe?
Those are some big shoes. And as excited as I was to get that call, it started to dawn on me the enormity of what that meant, because you have Danny Elfman's iconic score, Shirley, and now Hans Zimmer and James Newton Howard, and the first thought would be, okay, well, if you're going to do something different, and this show was different, we're not just talking like this was an extension of what was done before. This was a completely different beast, with the designs being so different. My first instinct is, okay, well, what was the sound in the past? Okay, Danny and Shirley, by extension, Shirley's music was kind of a Bernard Herrmann meets Carl Stalling, very busy, very lots of notes. So okay, well, I'll be a minimalist, and then you realize, well, geez, that's what they just did for the new Batman movie. That's what Zimmer did. The reality is, you just have to go, okay, well, this is supposed to be kind of a weird Elseworld interpretation of the Christopher Nolan movies. That's what we were told. So I thought, well, I'm going to do my own thing, but maybe I'll find a middle ground where I'll be more thematic, and kind of a little bit more orchestral, and have more orchestra in there than all the synth and kind of the tonality of the Zimmer stuff. So I'll kind of bring a little bit of Shirley and Danny, and I'll meet it halfway with the Zimmer stuff. Now, what's interesting is that I did the two segments in the show. Have I got the first story? Have I got a story for you? With the kids, and I think it was the fourth story, In Darkness Dwells. And each of these segments are completely, that was the thing we were told, it doesn't have, they should each be their own animal, because visually they had their own look and in animation, and they should, that's why they hired the three of us, three different composers, me, Kevin Manthey, and Rob Kral, to do our own things. I noticed in the first story, it was great because it was kind of a monster story, which is my bag. I love to write that kind of dramatic music. What I noticed in the first story, there wasn't really room for a theme. So, like I was saying, telling you earlier, I'm kind of I think kind of thematically, and I like to write a suite of themes. There wasn't really room for that because the Batman kept, he was a different creature in each each moment in that first story, there's a kid's imagination of what Batman is. So I couldn't have one thing going through because they were so bizarre and so different. In a way, I try to write little mini themes, like the Batmaster kind of has this little motif with the horn, and the first visualization of Batman is kind of like this H.P. Lovecraft slime smoke monster, and I try to keep that really atonal and loose and not to have any kind of a musical form. And then the third one is he's a robot, so I kind of had that mechanical and put a little bit of synth in there and had anvils, a lot of like metallic percussion going on. But the second story I did really felt, out of the whole movie, out of Batman Gotham Knight, out of all the segments, seemed to be the most tied into an exact extension from the Christopher, from Batman Begins. And so that one I wanted to kind of have, like I was saying, I wanted to meet it in between of what Shirley and Hans and James Newton, Danny and James Newton Howard were doing. So I had more orchestra, and I kind of came up with this two note that's like, you know, it's this tried and true superhero theme format of how many syllables is the hero's name, Batman, you know, two notes, Batman turned into bum bum. And so I had that kind of a two note Batman theme that goes through it. Yeah, it was just kind of, you have to just kind of put the past behind you and just go, it is what it is, and you just have to do your own thing. But for a moment there, you know, you are caught up in the enormity of, wow, all this fantastic, iconic music, you know, in the past, you know, and it's like, what a thrill to be able to, you know, contribute and just say, you know, yeah, I actually wrote music for Batman and Kevin Conroy is Batman, you know. It was scary for a couple of minutes, but then you just kind of move past it and you've got to do your own thing, you know, that's what you're hired for. And I think I'm really proud of both the segments. I think it was a lot of fun to write them, and it seemed to just come, you know, natural. It's a genre that I've been such a fan of for so long that I don't know. I think I've just from watching all of Bruce's stuff, and you just kind of know the language of it. You know, I was saying before how you have to get the what is the language of the story, and I think it's just something that I've been such a fan of all my life that it just kind of it came to me pretty quickly.
Well, now when you composing music for Batman Gotham Knight, did you consult or collaborate with the other composers on the project?
No, it's very interesting. We were all sequestered. I think the point of that was so each of our things were as unique as the animation for each segment was. We had met. There was a party for a animation. I think it was the president of Warner Animation just started, and there was kind of a get together of all the composers working at Warner Brothers at the time in television animation, a meet and greet, if you will, for this executive. And Rob and Kevin happened to be there, and that was the first I met. I had met Rob a couple months before at the Comic Con in San Diego. But that was the first time I met Kevin, and we just said, "Well, we're doing Batman," but we didn't really talk about anything. And then again, there was no directive that we had some kind of through line, you know, like as far as themes or any kind of musical cross pollination, if you will, between the three of us. We were just kind of left to our own devices, which I think is great because you have such a wide variety. I mean, Kevin, you've got me, and I'm kind of, you know, I do my thing, and then you've got you know, Kevin gets really experimental in the second one. That's just really great. You know, he's experimenting with weird sound textures and electronics, and it sounds completely different. You know, as much as the look of it looks is different from my story, the first story, it sounds different. And then you got Rob doing his wonderful gothic, you know, style. So yeah, we were all I think the first time we actually talked about it was at the very end. Kevin Manthey was doing he was putting together the music for the end credits, you know, the at the end of the film when you get the credit scrawl. And he was doing an edit of the three of our, like a little suite of the three of ours, music from, I guess, just different pieces. And we were kind of figuring out which piece would work with the time that we had. And that was the first time I heard the other guys. I think we all, each of us heard each other's music. And it was really cool. It was kind of like show and tell, you know. Because I was like, "Oh yeah," and here's, you know, and we were exchanging, you know, the full scores, you know, that each of us had written, and it was a lot of fun. It was, you know, Batman was just such a fun, grateful experience. I'm grateful for the experience all the way around, because not only was it just amazing to have an opportunity to say I wrote music for Batman, but the people couldn't have been more you know, kind and wonderful that I met on the show. Obviously, working with Bruce was an honor, but you know, Kevin's kind of a friend now. I call every now and then, and Rob's a friend. So and I had respected both Kevin and Rob. Kevin for his great work. I think the first time I remember hearing his stuff was on a show called Invader Zim, which was really cool, and of course Rob doing Angel, you know, all that fantastic music there. So I had been, you know, I had appreciated both these guys' work from the get-go, and when I heard, you know, who the other composers was, it was like, it was a real honor, because I'm kind of the new kid on the block, and to be, you know, it's an honor and a pleasure just to stand up and be represented with those two guys.
You mentioned this theory of the character's name with two syllables. Can you can you explain that theory and where it comes from?
I think, okay, let me back this up by saying, this is not real music theory. This is just kind of a, I don't even know if you could say it's a tradition, but I think it started, and maybe this is the only instance, if you really think about it. I'm sure people will, like, write in and call each other. There's been plenty of other superhero music that doesn't do this. But I think it started with Superman. On the original, you know, George Reeves Superman, and even the Fleischer cartoon Superman, the music would go, dun-dun-dun, Superman, dun-dun-dun-dun. You know, you could actually say Superman to the music. I think even Shirley did that on when they did the animated Superman show. And so that was just kind of, I don't know, just kind of a goofy tradition, I guess, I wanted to keep with Batman. Batman, dun-dun, two notes, you know, two syllables. And for instance, I did it again for Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman, you know, for, it's like da-da-da-da, that's the theme. So you probably could have get it, you know, it doesn't like jump out, but it's definitely, that's what I was thinking in my mind when I wrote the theme to Wonder Woman. So that's kind of what the whole syllable and meets how many notes it is. I think it all comes from Superman, every iteration of Superman. With the exception, I think Rob broke the mold. He did a movie called with Bruce, animated movie called Superman Doomsday. And I think the first thing Rob did was, I'm not going to do that. And he wrote like his own wonderful theme. And it's, you know, like I said, there's no rules to any of this stuff. It's just kind of traditional nonsense that I guess I ascribe to. But that's the deal with that.
Okay. Well, now as a composer, your job is of course to write music. But do you use silence as a composing tool?
Yeah, you know, well, as we were talking about earlier, silence is definitely, it's one of those things, because obviously as a composer and as a musician, you want to write as much and be represented as much in the story. But, you know, you have to go with what's appropriate with the tone and the drama and the story, the storytelling. Silence can be important. Like I said before, sometimes the lack of music can make a moment more real, I think, because in real life we don't have soundtracks going behind us when we do something. And so sometimes I think having music playing all the time in the background is subliminally can make an audience feel like they're watching a movie. And again, that's a stylistic, that's usually comes from a director. When you have a moment, when you have a situation where you think, would this work better with or without music? That's not really a composer thing. I mean, it is a collaborative effort, and sometimes I could look at something and like, I think with Wonder Woman, I was watching something with Bruce, and you could say, does this need music? This is just two people talking about something. It's not really story heavy. Why do we need music, in the background? Especially when we came out of, a large, there can be a moment where there's a large piece of music that's going for 10 minutes or something, or a 5 minute cue. Sometimes you need to give the audience a break from the music. You need to have a moment where it's quiet, because otherwise you just kind of the music, you just kind of become desensitized to it, and you need something to kind of mix up the story if you have the music playing wall to wall. But then again, that's a stylistic choice. You look at, I go back to the Star Wars films, that's pretty much wall to wall music. But if you're doing a suspense film or a horror film, it's in horror we have these cheap tricks. Music can be used as a cheap trick to scare you, and it's loud bangs and stingers and psycho strings, but sometimes there's a film called Exorcist 3 that has this great, I think William Peter Blatty, the author, director, has this great sequence where, well, I'm not going to ruin it for anybody that hasn't seen the movie, but there's this whole sequence of setup that has absolutely no music in it, and you kind of watch it. It goes on for like three, it seems like it's going on forever, and then there's a scare at the end of it, which is one of the best, one of the most frightening things as far as having an emotional reaction to a horror film that I've ever had. And you go, wow, that's a director that really knows, the power of sound and the power of music. So, it's a stylistic and creative choice. Like I said before, there's no rules to how any of this stuff is used, how music or, sound is used. But that really, it's a collaborative effort with the composer, but it really takes a director with a solid vision and understanding of the material, if he wants to evoke tension or comedy even sometimes, you don't having, that's a thing that I should talk about, when you talk about silence in a cartoon. Now these Batman not so much, because they were very short, those segments I did. I think the longest one was maybe 10 minutes or something like that. But in the new movie that I'm working on, Wonder Woman, there's some great humor in it. It's kind of Joss Whedon kind of humor, and I also had this with Hellboy too, where I try to play these superhero cartoons straight. Like, I don't think of them as cartoons. I think of them as if they were a live action thing. I don't think I'm writing for children or writing for any audience. I'm scoring these like they would be, a big budget with A-list, movie stars, and, complete live action. So I play it straight musically. And one of the things that happens sometimes is the humor, there could be a joke or some kind of a humorous event. And because it's animation, you got to be careful with the music, because it can sound kind of cartoony. You don't want to be like wah 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 like over a joke. So sometimes I find if there's a lot of humor in a moment, and the writing, the writing of the story and the comedy is solid, the joke should tell itself. It doesn't need any help from me. So that's an example of, sometimes I would have said to Bruce, do we really need anything here? Because this is kind of a funny moment, and I think anything else is just, that's just one more thing that it's good as it is, but if we were to put music, it would just kind of put it a little over the top and make it corny. So there's a good example of, when silence is used, and sometimes I will, I'll say, listen, I'd love to score this, but I don't think it needs anything right here.
So now, how would a score that you write today differ from one that you wrote, let's say, at the beginning of your career?
Oh, Well, you know, I think we all grow. You know, every time, every project that we have, I think we. Well, you know, like, well, I should say, I can only speak for myself, but I think that's the goal for most composers is to you learn something. You know, every time you work, you learn something about yourself. You learn something about your writing. You know, and you get. I think it helps you with confidence. It makes you know, you can work faster. You know that on a professional level that you can do something within a budget and a timeline, and it's not going to kill you. You've done it before. Then musically, you know, you learn what works and what doesn't work. You know, again, I'm self-taught, and I think it's important. I think a formal education is very important, and I'm not. I would never dismiss that to anyone, and would encourage anyone that's interested in this or you know anything in music that you should have some type of education. It's very helpful, but the power or the process of doing things for yourself and learning. You know, you learn about yourself. There's a academic, you know, training that you can have, but then there's real life things, you know, that you learn about your own process and by experimenting. And sometimes, you know, I think it can be an asset and a liability because I feel like I'm not stuck with certain things. Well, let me put it this way. In when you're working without an orchestra, it's kind of different when you're just doing using all synthesizers and electronics to emulate an orchestra, because if you were to write just like you would for a real orchestra, the computer, it would sound kind of phony because the computers aren't they don't have that human margin of error that is in every bit of playing that a live musician would have, and so you know you can't write certain things like glissandos or these big, you know, string runs or do like really you know really busy. Well, I find that I can't write these very busy or complicated you know orchestral writing because the technology just, it would sound phony, and you always kind of, it sounds kind of just cheesy, like really bad old video game music or something, you know. So if I had a real orchestra, I would write in that style, and that's a big thing, like learning of what I would do. Of how I work now as opposed to, you know, how I worked a couple months ago or 2 years ago or whatever. You know, my goal is to have a project where I have a live orchestra, and my style of writing would be different because I know a real orchestra could handle, you know, the complexity of things that I wanted to write as opposed to me. I guess it all boils down to this, Rob. If I wanted to write something really complex, that just means I'd have to spend even more time trying to edit the computer so it sounded real and not cheesy. I guess if that's what would sum up the difference of that style, if I got to work with an orchestra, I would try to be better than I was at the beginning of my career. No, it's funny because, like I said, I think we all. I've never spoken to a single composer. Everybody from Chris Young to you know to James Newton Howard, that all say we all cringe at our early work. And you listen to the orchestration. You know, I think we just, like I said, you learn as you go on. You know, hopefully that's the whole point of life in general. You know, you want to expand upon what you have. And, you know, you're never done. Nobody's ever, I don't believe anybody's ever a master of anything. I think you just, you know, you keep going and you accumulate knowledge and you learn about yourself and what works and what doesn't work. But yeah, I think we all kind of look back and go, what were you thinking with that orchestration? That's really, maybe you should have, you know, and that's the beauty of it. You know, that which doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I don't know.
You mentioned, you're working on Wonder Woman. So what else does the future hold for you?
I have two projects, two projects that I can't really talk about, but they're both in a genre that I love. They're horror stories. Both are kind of monster movies. One was, yeah, I probably shouldn't get into them too much because the ink hasn't dried on quite a few things, so they're still in the process of everything being settled. But I'm very excited to get started on this. I'll be able to get if not an orchestra, but some live musicians this time, which would be fantastic. We'd love to work with real human beings. It's very lonely in the studio, surrounded by all these computers. See, we're starting. I'm starting on this other horror project. Probably, and I'm just taking some time off. This is the first Thanksgiving and Christmas where I haven't been working through to meet some deadline. I don't, for some reason, the past 4 years, I've had to deliver stuff like on, you know, New Year's Day, which has always been odd. But I'm looking forward on just taking a month or two off and then jumping into this other project. Yeah, I don't think I can. Sorry, I can't tell you. Can't tell you what it is.
No problem. We all have our things that we can and can't say. I really appreciate the time you've given me today. It's great to see someone as enthusiastic as yourself working.
Thank you, Rob.